the Art Institute, which is where we first met, and Colin Roy. Many of the professors at the Art Institute were people that are in the collection here at DeRosa, people like Paul Koss and Tony Labatt, and I could go on, Dewey Crumpler. I could go on and on. But he is kind of the part of the DeRosa family, which is one of the reasons we were able to have this show tonight. So I want to tell you a little personal story. Okay. I was working at the Art Institute. I don't even remember what year it was, like 2003 or something like that. And I had these two handsome graduate students come into my office. I was the associate dean there. And I said, what are they doing here? Well, they sat down and they told me that they wanted to create an arts organization that helped artists. It was a longer story than that, but that where artists could come and have studios and work and give back to the community. And I thought they were crazy. And I said, no way. They said, we want to write a business plan. And I had done some strategic plans before that. And I said, you really want to do it? I don't. And that's crazy. You guys are crazy. Well, that organization is now Root Division. They did it. Successburg. Here. Yeah. So I'm kind of in awe of Mitch and also his partner, Nathan Suter. And I'm in awe of Root Division. But tonight is really special because now we get to see his visual artwork. He does many different sets. I've seen him conduct films and everything. But he's going to introduce our guests here tonight. And we all have to cross our fingers and figure out how we can save the Bay Area art scene today. Okay, Mitch?
Small task. That's all we have to figure out tonight. Thank you. I can't tell you what a joy it is to be here. And I just want to give you that a ton of thanks to Kate Eilertson personally and the DeRosa. I think that, you know, Kate, it's been more than 25 years because Root Division turns 25 this year. That means you were 26 before it was born. I guess.
I was that far.
Yeah. And I want to thank everyone for coming here tonight. I want to thank the DeRosa for giving this opportunity for this conversation, because Twyla, when I was talking to her about the show, she said, hey, Mitch, you want to have an artist talk before the opening? And I said, yeah, I want to have an artist talk. I want to get Dewey and Emily and Griff, and I need to have a conversation about with them what happened, what's going on, and where are we going? And Twyla said, I'm not sure you understood the question, but that talk sounds like a great idea. Do you think they'd be up for it? And Griff knows exactly how I did this. I first called Dewey and I got Dewey on board. And once I had Dewey on board, I knew I had Griff on board. And then I said, Emily, you're going to let a bunch of guys talk to this crowd? And Emily's like, well, now I have to be here. So I'm really, really honored to have these people here. And it is. This is built out of curiosity. What's going on? So that's why you're going to see my daughter over there taking notes. Like, this isn't just an empty free-for-all. We're trying to figure some things out, right? And to introduce the folks I have up here, I'm not going to introduce Dewey well. And Griff, and anybody who knows Dewey knows it's kind of an impossible task. I will say it very shortly that he's an artist's artist. He is a maker of the highest order. He is a Bay Area legend. And more than that, he's a teacher of mine and a friend. I am Dewey Crumpler. So now you know. Now you know I've met that man. And you can take that name throughout the Bay Area and throughout the country, and you are in good stead. Down there at the end is Griff. And Griff is also an artist. Gallery owner. He had Gallery 16, and I can tell you 25 years ago when we were all in grad school, that's where we imagined our art. That's where we wanted to be. He was the center and the hub of the scene in San Francisco. He's a documentary filmmaker who made a quite beautiful, detailed, poignant film called Tell Them We Were Here. And I think somewhat reluctantly, Griff has been pushed into the role of one of the most articulate and fierce art advocates for artisan and the art scene in the Bay Area in the last 5 years. And it's great to see you, Griff, and it's great to follow you and hear your voice in this wilderness.
Myself, never going to live up to that, so I'm sorry in advance.
As Kate told you, about 25 years ago, I started a nonprofit named Root Division, and it provides subsidized studio space for artists in exchange for community hours. And they teach kids, they do monthly art exhibitions, and they teach adult education courses. And when I was starting that organization, I grew to hate the word community. When I would talk to people like, oh, I'm a community member, I help the community, I just hated it. I really felt like that word community was this like red herring that people used to avoid defining exactly who they were helping, measuring how they are making their lives better, and being a consistent presence, right? And you can imagine with that attitude how many grants I lost from my organization. And then I met Emily. And Emily changed my idea of community and what a community member is. She is the exemplar of a community member. She has been supporting artists and art organizations for 25 years. And yes, she is dedicated. Yes, she has worked her ass off. Yes, she is super smart, but you know what? She's delightful. And she can really change your attitude about not just the responsibility, but about the joy you can bring to a community over a long period of time. And so as a community member, I wanted to hear her voice in this dialogue as well. She has been part of very important organizations throughout the Bay, besides Root Division, of course, SOEX, Intersection for the Arts, which was the grandmother of the art scene, which Kate was also an executive director of, Yerba Buena and The Space, and she's currently at Patreon, which is another interesting platform to engage artists with audiences. So, by the way, typically they're charge at the door for an opening like this. Kate graciously waived it, but since my mom is here, okay, my son and my nephew will be taking up a collection after this conversation. So you don't have to feel bad about not giving, but I'm telling you again, my mom is here. The baskets will be in front of you, and be prepared, okay? All right, trigger warning. We had a conversation before this, all right? The news is not good, okay? The news is not good, and none of these people are up here to spare you the truth. I want to just say that from their job is also not to provide answers, but is to start a conversation with all of us, okay? That's their job, is to start this conversation. If that conversation goes off into the opening hours, great. If that conversation goes out into the world, even better, okay? They're not up here to give answers. They're here to spark us all putting this stuff together, together, okay? I do promise you this. I have some great news at the end. All right, so I'll just kind of tease you with that. All right, pen ready? Griff, I want to start with you. Imagine I'm an alien, right, from a different universe, like Los Angeles. I was here 20 years ago, okay? I come back, I look around the Bay Area art scene. What happened?
Wow. Well, I came to the Bay Area in 1990 to go to graduate school at the Art Institute. San Francisco Art Institute was a beacon for so many of us that were really serious about making art and wanted to study with an amazing faculty that whose reputation preceded them, including Dewey. Dewey had an effect on everybody that he taught, but he certainly had an effect on me. And when I'm looking back on what we've lost in the last few months, right, all the independent art schools in the Bay Area have closed. San Francisco Art Institute was the first ball to drop, Mills, CCA. And despite Mitch's animosity to the term community, the art schools are the motivating magnet to the Bay Area. You know, we think about the amount of students, faculty, visiting faculty, curators, filmmakers, folks that enlivened all these institutions. And then those people made their homes here and perhaps taught or went into one of many avenues within the arts that were available to people at the time. You know, we really see the void that's created, and we're just beginning to realize the effects of it. I mean, if young creative people aren't coming here, what is going to be left of the arts community then, right? And the arts community is not the commercial aspect of the arts that gets all the attention, the museums and the contemporary galleries, which have you believe that it's about sort of star making and revenue generation. And the commercial aspect of the art world has nothing to do with the art world. You know, not to do with the art world that I was trying to connect with. When I got out of San Francisco Art Institute, the last year I was in my graduate degree, I started Gallery 16 immediately. And it was really because I wanted to be around the community of makers. I wanted to be around other people that made work. And I wanted to have those conversations in public. The thing that you all did by coming here today is an extension of that energy, right? This is what builds art communities, is having these real conversations in public. And at a time when we aren't talking to each other face-to-face as much anymore, and we spend all of our time on the phones, and we get distracted by all the bullshit and the AI and all the impending doom that the algorithm would have you believe, the antidote for all of that stuff is in this room, right? I mean, it's the best part of the arts. It brings us together to have hard conversations and talk about things that are unusual. And what else in life does that for us? You know, so I can't say, like, if I landed here and I had no idea about what preceded this, I probably wouldn't think much of it. But knowing all the history that we've lost in such a short period of time, and the real engine for community building and training young people to think in a way that is distinctly unlike any other way you work. I mean, there's nothing to compare to it. You know, I think that if you put the arts under the microscope and the only thing that you're recognizing is the value system, this sort of transactional relationship about how much something is worth, then you're really missing the point, right? That's not how we learn through the arts. Yeah, it's a difficult time for sure.
Dewey, I want to go to you next. I don't know if you remember, we were in a cafe in Rockridge 20 years ago. And we were talking about this and that. And at one point you turned to me and you said, man, you might have to get the hell out of here. What did you see then? Right. So this is before these galleries were closing. This is before a lot of these institutions were under the financial stress that they are in or experiencing. But you saw something. What did you see then?
First of all, thank you. Thank you. And thank you for coming. San Francisco was, when I was a student or a younger in the 1960s, was an extraordinarily vibrant, difficult place for the arts. But it was a kind of weird zone. There was creativity everywhere because the rock movement, which had come out of a whole rock and roll period, was expressing itself in the San Francisco Bay Area, particularly Haight and places like that. The Black Power movement had produced a real energy around the idea of creativity, and the arts were central to that. I came out of that, and the art community, that is to say the art world, was also very vibrant and full of luminaries, many of which are in this collection. San Francisco was an intellectual hub of the West Coast. Los Angeles was, but that idea of La La Land sort of came from the Bay Area, looking at Los Angeles, because it was all glitz, Hollywood, and not much intellectual rigor.
No offense taken.
No. Well, that's the way.
You didn't say you had to move there.
That's true. We didn't see it that way. I used to go to LA every month, all through my youth. And Los Angeles was not as energetic as the Bay Area. But I think that San Francisco, like New York City, was affordable. And so that meant artists were always coming to these areas where you could find places and enclaves where you could operate and you could live and you could hang out. And after the 1980s, this began to constrain under the idea of commerce and free markets. And those free markets, that whole ideology, started to infect the creative community, because most of the people and the money generating aspect of the Bay Area was moving out of industry into technology. And the people who were leading technology didn't have the same kind of interest as the previous robber barons. Their interest was trying to purge themselves of all the money and help to elevate people through this idea of using the arts to make people better. That sort of helped to drive the interest in art in the 20th century. But by the time we got to the late 90s, that idea of art and money had solidified itself. And to try to end this, this diatribe I'm going on here, I remember distinctly that when I was a student, if you told someone that you were going to college to study art, they would look at you down through their nose and think that I'm sorry for your parents. And in the 90s, after the art boom that many people in the stock market follow to get wealthier, that started an idea about art and money that made Americans, average Americans, say to their child, well, okay, you may be able to get rich on art, so we'll pay for you to go to school. And I remember all these people coming to the Art Institute, applying to be artists, and telling us that they just started painting 2 weeks ago and they had a whole closet and bedroom full of art, and that they wanted to be artists. Now that right there made me think, like, how did this happen? Got it. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, had an impact ultimately on a generation that didn't have the same idea about art that a previous generation.
It's kind of back to Chris' idea, where something happened where the idea of art star usurped art making in our community. That's and I remember that, Griff, also, when I was a grad student, I remember a handful of students came and left because they couldn't find an apartment, to your point of,
that's
like,
right.
when tech happened. Lastly, the last point, no, because I want to get to Emily, that I distinctly remember trying to build Root Division board. Tech people kind of weren't interested. We were surrounded by tech people when it wasn't, you know, Griff, you and I have talked about this before. It's like, you know, we found you, Emily. And so that's...
I was not in tech at that time.
and so to you, working within those organizations, like give us the past from that perspective in these organizations. Yeah. When you started feeling the stresses and the seismic shifts in the last 10 to 20 years, what do you go?
So I worked in development, building community and relationships and fundraising for Gilbert Buena Center for about 15 years. And there was definitely a moment where everyone got hot on tech. And I remember it was actually the president, I think it was Ford Foundation at the time, doing a whole really interesting talk about the way philanthropy was changing. And that the generations that historically had supported opera, ballet, museums were aging out, and their legacies were not the same, that their families maybe weren't as interested in giving to the arts, or there wasn't a class of people coming in who wanted to do the same thing. And he was ringing the bell saying, hey, everybody, wake up. Like, we can't do things as we have been. And shortly after that, I came here in 2002. So it was after the first boom, before it ramped up again. And people started to think, okay, well, we need to get this debt money. Corporate sponsorships was still pretty significant. Grant funding was still pretty significant. Individual donors were still contributing. And I think that mix is always very important. But there was really a focus on how do we cultivate an interest from a community of people who, unless they grew up with art and arts and culture in our lives, didn't value what galleries or nonprofits or, you know, presenting institutions were doing. So you started to see a lot of, you know, nighttime programming or how do we attract people with nightlife into these spaces and get them to come through the door? How do we build up young advisory boards and eventually get folks interested in becoming board members or donors? Or sponsors with our companies.
Okay. I want to do a speed round, then I want to just get a round of questions if anybody has anything, because we're going to go from past to present. All right, speed round. Revisionist history. All right, one thing you'd go back to do to stop or to do to kind of change course of Bay Area art scene. Revisionist, the category for everyone is revisionist history. Griff.
I didn't know we needed to do it, but I would use the energies to try to keep the philanthropy money organized around the educational systems here. Got I mean, I didn't know that
schools.
I didn't know that we needed to save the schools. I mean, the San Francisco Art Institute was always, you know, like herding coyotes over there, and it was a mess, but it was a mess in a beautiful, artistic way. CCA had a route that seemed more, more geared towards professional career. They had all kinds of disciplines that seemed like they, you know, the pedagogy seemed like it kept up with the times. But the idea that we were going to have to use all that energy to save the schools, I didn't see Zach on the horizon. Yeah.
Emily, what would you do? Revisionist history.
I would have started quitting before there was a crisis. I think that before organizations start to lay people off and close down, or institutions started to close down, there was a lot of empire building and expansion without thinking about how we collaborate and share resources. And I think ultimately that
share resources across organizations that.
Yeah, I mean, there was a proliferation of new organizations, or SFAI and CCA both expanded their campuses.
Their physical real estate footprint.
Yeah, and that was, you know, locked money.
Somebody else said that San Francisco Art Institute, that they didn't buy that new building, they'd still be here. I'm not sure.
I heard the same thing about CCA. And that's what I think is that if we had a little bit more of a collective understanding of the whole and how we could do something to get there. Then
Dewey, you were there. You were at San Francisco Art Institute. What, I mean, What would you do?
Education.
Education? If only we had the president of EdVoice here in our audience, Marshall Tuck, to do something about education in the state of California. Maybe we'll fire some questions at you later, Marsh.
You know, the art community has a very long-standing tradition of having to fight each other for the same resources.
Okay.
Right? And so when I moved to San Francisco, my father had been in Congress for 20 years. He was a Democrat who was winning in the state of Montana. In a place where he shouldn't have been elected. He was elected for 20 years and was the leading voice for support of the National Endowment for the Arts. So was the whipping boy for the right. And when I got to San Francisco, we had gone through a terrible, you know, the culture war of the 90s and the Mapplethorpe drama and all the stuff. The right wing of the political spectrum using a dead gay man and Karen Finley to other the arts world, right? So what I was shocked by was that there were more nonprofit related arts organizations in San Francisco when I got here than anywhere else per capita in the country. What that meant was everybody was fighting for the same slice of pie. Right. And so you can't pit each other against one another when they're trying to essentially do the same things. And so, you know, again, coordinating and community building is one of the ways that you do that. You realize that some of these resources can be shared or people can co-program, you know, there's all kinds of ways to do it. But we were threatened by this, you know, starting in the early 90s for sure.
Questions. Let's open up because I want to get questions earlier, right? So this is about the past, the last 20 years. Could we talk about now from each of their perspectives, but shoot a question, hand in the air, anyone, about what's going on there last.
Yeah.
This isn't a question. It's more of a state.
Yeah, great.
That
what we're talking about today.
Yeah, both of those expansions where they mentioned the CCA and San Francisco Art Institute, they're plunking down. That's a real estate bet.
I mean, I think it does have to do with the price of real estate in large part, but it also, I mean, because people can't stay here and young people can't, they're not going to come because of the cheap price of rent. Yeah, exactly. But you also have the fact that everybody wants to bemoan the record store when it leaves and they sold their record player 20 years ago. If you don't support the thing with your resources, right, the local galleries, the local weirdo places, all of that stuff that you know, you're like, oh my God, I'm so thankful they're here, but, right, you're not using your resources to help them, this is what you get,
and,
you know.
And by resources, it's not just money. There's the network that I show up and I come to your art opening. There's more, especially as a young person living here who didn't have money to say, well, I'm just going to show up. I'm going to go support my friends who are making art and tell people about it, that there is always a way to do it. And every time something closes, I say to myself, well, when's the last time I supported art?
Yeah.
Other observations, Marsh. Your question, Karen, have other cities, you see other cities actually increase their art scene, like this naturally just overall down, where we think that Bay Area because cost of living, you got search culture changes, like that's down to other urban areas of the country, but with that, yeah, you scroll. Marshall Trent or the poor Bay Area?
No, I don't think there's one place you can point to that's where it's growing. I mean, there's pockets of it, but what you can find guaranteed is that when corporate industry wrecks a place and makes it unaffordable, or the industry pulls out, who do they call? Who needs to beautify the neighborhood? Who needs to make the murals, right? The arts community is always the ones that you go to when you have to, you know, you have to beautify the damage that corporate America has done to places like this. But it seems like we're only visible to them when the disaster's already happened.
Okay.
Hi, what they said. Dr. Darcy is not a politician in his data. use data to tell that, or how much money you're bringing it, that you are surrounding it, data to say how many kids, you know, don't have the colored pencils in their school bus.
You need to break into those positions. And